getting sober requires a lot more than mind over matter, a lot more than willpower. It's about leveraging the support around you. People in recovery typically need a mix of medical help, emotional support, and changes in lifestyle to manage their addiction, not just mental determination. As both a therapist and someone embracing the recovery lifestyle, there's one tool I always recommend to people needing extra accountability: SoberLink. SoberLink is a high-tech breath analyzer system designed to help you get and stay sober. And here's why I love it. You'll test the same day every day, eliminating testing anxiety. Friends and family receive instant test results, helping you rebuild trust and preventing relapse. Accountability is a part of that, and it's something to really be embraced. Devices have built-in facial recognition, so your support circle knows you're testing, and tamper-resistant sensors flag any attempts at trying to beat the system, so your sobriety is never questioned. So let 2024 be your best year yet. Visit soberlink.com/TAM to sign up and receive $50 off your device. That's soberlink.com/TAM. And let accountability be your guide. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 59 of the Addicted Mind podcast. My name is Dwayne Osterlund, and I'm your host. I'm also the founder of Novus Mindful Life Institute Family Counseling and Recovery in Long Beach, California. If you or anyone you know is struggling with any of life's challenges, please reach out to us. You can find out more information about us at theaddictedmind.com/help. Today's episode is number 59, and our guest is Glenn Livingston, and he is going to talk about his book, Never Binge Again. It was a great conversation to have with him. I love talking about this issue, especially about food addiction, binge eating, definitely something very personal to me and I definitely can relate to. So I love exploring this issue and understanding it and seeing it and talking with people who have different perspectives about it. Glenn really shares a very hopeful way of dealing with this issue and being about being strategic and actionable and taking charge of your own life. So it was a great conversation to have with him. I really enjoyed it. I think you guys will enjoy it as well. Also, don't forget, please rate and review us in iTunes if you're enjoying this podcast. I really appreciate it. It really helps get us a lot of exposure on iTunes, so I really appreciate it. Also, you can join our Facebook group. Just go to Facebook and type in the Addicted Mind podcast. We'll come up, join. I'm growing that group, getting more conversation and sharing resources there as well. So appreciate it. And let's go ahead and just start this episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. And I'm excited to introduce our guest today. His name is Glenn Livingston, and he's author of the book Never Binge Again. Glenn, you want to introduce yourself?
Well, everything you said was true.
A good start.
That is my name, and that is the book that I wrote. And I guess there are a couple of things you should know about me. First one is that I'm not just a doctor that's decided to work with binge eating clients. I'm someone who had a fairly serious problem himself.
Right.
So I don't want to seem impersonal or clinical in the way that I talk about this. And actually, the solution that I came to was not necessarily in concert with the best practices of my profession. So I offer it as training and education rather than treatment.
Right.
But anyway, the other thing you should know about me is that I'm a psychologist by training, and I had a large child and family practice on Long Island. And because I didn't have children myself and never commuted, I had time for a second career, which was consulting big advertising and big food and big pharma.
Right.
And a lot of things I kind of wish I never did, but I did. And I learned an awful lot about what happens in the food industry because of it. And all these things came together as I was solving my own problem to present a kind of interesting, unusual method that I never thought I would talk about. I really thought it was going to be a private thing. But yeah, that's what you should know about me. Other than the fact I'm from a family of 17 psychotherapists.
Oh, that's a lot of psychotherapy to be around.
Yeah, and the standard joke is that if something breaks in the house, everybody knows how to ask it how it feels, but nobody knows how to fix it.
There you go. That's I like that statement very much. So you kind of came to this book, and I've read some of your past story. You've kind of came to this book through your own personal journey of dealing with this issue of obesity and binging and food. And that's something why I like putting this topic on the addicted mind, is that something that a lot of people struggle with, especially if they struggled with addiction in the past. Food, if they've given up some of their drug of choice or behavior of choice, food almost sometimes, a lot of times, fills the gap for that.
Yeah. I mean, I was 17 when I figured out that I could eat whatever I wanted to if I exercised for a couple hours a day. And the problem was that I couldn't keep eating 6,000 or 7,000 calories when I had to stop working out that much. Like when I was 22 and I was married and I had patients and I had to commute 2 hours each way, I could just barely work out a couple hours a week. And I couldn't stop thinking about it. I couldn't stop thinking about food. And I would be sitting with a suicidal patient and thinking about when I can get the next pizza. And you know, if you know anything about psychology, you know that you have to be really present and lend people your soul. It's
right.
Yeah. It's not really, yeah. And I wasn't someone who had another drug of choice. I quit alcohol and drugs mostly when I was 17, entirely when I was 23 or so. Not because I was addicted, but just because I didn't like the impact that it had on my body. But food was not something that you could quit. You got to take the lion out of the cage and walk it around the block 3 times a day, right?
Right, right.
And so I struggled. And I got fatter and fatter. And my triglycerides went through the roof. And I had all types of health problems associated with it. And the doctors were telling me that if I didn't do something about it, I was likely going to die in my 30s. And so I got serious. And I went the psychological route, as you might imagine, given the family that I came from. So I went to see the best psychologists and eating disorder specialists and psychiatrists. And I took medication. And I went to Reader's Anonymous. And I did everything you could imagine in and around New York City. And I would characterize it as a very soulful journey, which I don't regret at all. But I would get a little better and a lot worse, and a little better and a lot worse, a little better and a lot worse. Until 3 things happened all around the same time. Well, one of them was a little before the others. But the first thing was that I conducted a study for myself. I organized 40,000 people in the days when internet clicks were cheap over a couple of years to take a survey about what they struggled with food, what foods they struggled with, and what they struggled with in their life. And I found 3 interesting things. One was that people who struggled with chocolate, like me, my itches usually started with chocolate, they tended to be lonely or brokenhearted. People that struggled with crunchy, salty things like chips and pretzels, they tended to be stressed at work. And people who struggled with chewy, starchy things, they tended to be stressed at home. And I thought that was really fascinating. And when I asked my mom about it, because she raised me, she said, "Well, you know, Glenn, you're not in the world's best marriage. Are you? Is that what's doing?" I said, "Yeah, well, that's part of it. But what about my upbringing? Is there something that would connect the dots for me?" She got this horrible sound in her voice and look in her face, and she said, "I'm so sorry, honey." And I said, "What?" She said, "I'm so sorry." I said, "Mom, it's okay. I forgive you. This is 40 years ago and whatever happened, happened. And I just want to know." And she said, "Well, when I was 1 year old in 1965, my dad, her husband, was a captain in the Army and they were talking about sending him to Vietnam. And she was terrified because they were trying to have a second kid and she thought she was going to be a single mother and she couldn't bear it. At the same time, her father had just been released from prison. And she found out he was guilty and she'd adored him her whole life. And so she was kind of falling apart. She was terrified my dad was going to be sent away and killed. And she didn't have the one person she always relied upon. And so she said that she used to sit and stare at the wall a lot. And when I would come running to her for love or cuddles or food, she would point to her refrigerator that she kept on the floor. And inside the refrigerator was a big bottle of Bosco chocolate syrup. And she said, "Glenn, go get your Bosco." And I'd go running to the refrigerator on the floor. I'd take out the chocolate Bosco. I'd suck on the bottle and I'd go into a chocolate sugar coma. And if this were a movie, then at that point, Mom and I would have a great big hug and a great big cry, and I would never have trouble with chocolate again. But although we had a big hug and a cry, and you know, metaphorically, we certainly forgave each other, and I was able to forgive myself.
Right.
My chocolate eating actually got worse. And the reason it got worse was because there was a voice in my head that went something like this. When our mama, she left a great big chocolate-sized hole in our heart, and until we can fill it up with the love of our life, until we can find the love of our life, we're just going to have to keep binging on chocolate. Let's go get some now. Yippee, let's go do it.
Right, right.
And so there was this voice of justification. And I said, well, that's interesting. Because if you think of the emotions like the fire, most people think that their emotions cause the binging, or the hole in their heart is causing the binging. But it's possible to have a raging fire inside a well-contained fireplace, and it actually becomes like center of hearth and home. And it's actually a good thing. So it's not necessarily the emotions in and of itself. It's whether or not you have a good enough fireplace. And I realized that there was this voice of justification that seemed to poke holes in the fireplace.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So that you could kind of see that that food was kind of that quelling that those leaks from the fireplace. This is where this chocolate kind of came in.
Yeah. So the other two things that happened were that I recognized that the food industry was developing these hyperpalatable concentrations of starch and sugar and fat and oil and salt and excitotoxins. And they were putting billions of dollars into that. And then billions of dollars more was going into advertising them to make them look as if they were healthy, look as, make us feel like we really needed it. And like for example, I remember a major food bar manufacturer telling me that their biggest profitable insight was when they realized that they had to take the vitamins out of the bar because the vitamins were expensive and they're making the bar taste not quite as good. And instead they put the money into the packaging so that it would appear shiny with a diversity of colors and it would appear to be healthy. And that's perfectly legal.
Right.
In nature, a diversity of colors would represent a diversity of nutrients.
Right. Right?
Like a big, think of a big green salad with red tomatoes and purple cabbage and yellow carrots.
So you've got this, as I'm putting this story together, you've got this emotional side where you have your own internal, kind of like what you said, I like that idea of that hearth, that fireplace where you can contain those emotions, but if they're leaking out, that's a problem. And then here you have an industry that's working, I guess, in a way against our own psychology to create these hyper palatable foods.
Like every time that we look for love at the bottom of a bag or a box or a container, there's some fat cat in a white suit with a mustache just laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it reminds me of, you know, someone mentioned, have you ever Pringles in there? And, you know, what's their slogan? It says something like, pop the top and you can't stop. And I feel like that food is like designed to be addictive. I could easily sit down and eat that whole tube of chips and not even feel full.
And then buy three more.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. They're designed to hit your bliss point without giving you the nutrition to make you feel satisfied. That's what that food is designed to do. So when I'm putting that together and I realize that there are 5,000 to 7,000 messages beamed at us over the airwaves and the internet about food every year, and maybe a half dozen of them are about eating raw fruits and vegetables, I just said there's an overwhelming force stacked against us. And this isn't really a love yourself thin situation. Maybe this isn't something where nurturing my inner wounded child is going to do it. Maybe it's more like I have to take charge. Maybe it's more like my reptilian brain, which doesn't know love, by the way. The reptilian brain knows eat, mate, or kill. The reptilian brain is being targeted by these billions of dollars in the industry. And I'm going to have to dominate that reptilian brain, which I'm perfectly capable of doing because our neuroanatomy is set up so that the part of us that does know love, you know, the mammalian brain and the neocortex, where we define who we are and how we want to be in the world and the kind of person we're trying to become, I'm going to have to set it up so that I take control over that and dominate it in the same way that I dominate my bladder and my testicles. And I know that might sound a little crude or weird, but if you think about it, it's a biological urge. Like they're It's a very powerful biological urge. If I see an attractive woman in the street, I don't run up to her and kiss her. I know that I have to approach in a very particular way or not at all, or else I'm going to get in a lot of trouble, right?
Right.
If I am in the middle of a meeting in a conference room, I don't just pee because my bladder is full and says you have to pee. I have to either wait until the end of the meeting and use the bathroom or excuse myself and express those urges in a particular way at a particular time, totally under my control.
Right. I mean, I want to go back a little bit and because I want to follow this, but I also wanted to comment on just a lot of people who come into my office and are looking for help and are struggling with food and obesity. It kind of, there's this tendency to completely blame ourselves for our lack of willpower or like that there isn't some kind of, at times, forces out there that are really working against us. Some of these food manufacturers are designing this to be so hyper palatable that it is difficult. And understanding that also, I think, kind of lifts the shame a little bit so that we can be more effective at what you're talking about right now.
Yeah, I think a big part of what we want to do is turn our shame into anger.
Right.
I think that we do need more protection from the government and we do need better regulations on the industry and that kind of thing. But I don't know that we're going to make that happen anytime soon.
Right. But then what you're saying here, I hear, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that we can take some control.
Yeah. So here's what I did. And this is, it's very counterintuitive. It's very crude. It's very primitive. And it's embarrassing for a sophisticated psychologist to be admitting this publicly. This was just a journal. I just kept it in my own. It was going to be private. It's just for my own recovery. But I decided that I was going to have to make very clear rules about what was healthy and not healthy for me. And this goes against the best practices of my profession in some ways, because there are a lot of guidelines that say, use a guideline and not a rule. Try to eat well 90% of the time and indulge 10% of the time. Try to be intuitive with food. But I think that part of the problem is that industry has broken our intuition. They're really taking advantage of our intuition.
Right.
It's like being an intuitive smoker.
Right. I totally agree with that.
So I made a really clear line in the sand and I said, I will never eat chocolate during the week again. I'll only ever have it on Saturday and Sunday. And because I had that really clear line in the sand, I then knew that any voice in my head which suggested that I would have chocolate during the week, either now or in the future, I decided that was going to be my inner pig and that it was squealing for pig slop. The pig was the lizard brain. The squeal was whatever it said to try to get me to break my rules. And the pig slop was the thing that it wanted me to break my rules for. And when I felt a craving, I would say, well, I don't want that, my pig does. I don't eat pig slop and I don't let farm animals tell me what to do. And as crazy and primitive as that sounds, at the moment of impulse, it would give me these extra microseconds to wake up and make the right decisions. And I wish I could tell you that I was immediately all better, but I wasn't. What was immediately better was that I no longer felt powerless and confused. I no longer felt like there was this mysterious force. I felt like I was making conscious decisions. And since I was the one making the rules, no one was telling me what to eat, I eventually decided that it was silly not to make the right choice, because if I really wanted something, I could just change the rules and, you know, I'd always give myself 24 to 48 hours for those new rules to take effect so that I couldn't do it at the moment.
It almost sounds like, you know, being able to have that dialogue saying, okay, this is my inner pig or this is whatever feels right to name it, gives you that moment of like, hey, wait, I might be able to control this. Like you differentiate it from yourself a little bit, it sounds like.
Yeah, and it helps remove the shame also, because realize you're dealing with this very primitive part of us that just needs to be redirected and controlled. And the other part of it, Dwayne, was to make sure I was feeding myself correctly. You can't make a rule that says I'll never pee again. You have to find the right time and place to pee.
Right.
Otherwise, your body's going to say, believe me, you're going to pee. And if you just eliminate stuff and you don't, like it turns out when I was craving the chocolate, I really wanted energy. And so if you don't find some place to get that energy in a healthier way, then you're still going to really be struggling with cravings. So I experimented with all kinds of things. And eventually I realized that if I had a kale banana smoothie when I was craving chocolate. I didn't get the same high that I would get when I would eat the chocolate, because chocolate's kind of a drug.
Right. Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't have chocolate bars on the Savannah.
Yeah.
They didn't exist in the tropics. This is a man-made concentration. It's lovely for certain people, but for me, it was a drug.
Yeah. I think a lot of people would say that.
Absolutely. And it would help me remember why I wanted to give it up during the week. Jeanine Roth talks about there being two types of deprivation. And when we're letting go of something, we're always thinking about our inner pigs. We're always telling us how deprived we're going to feel. You're not going to have chocolate during the week. What about when you go to Starbucks? What about your afternoon lunch break? You're not going to hang out with other people and have fun there and talk to everyone. That's going to be horrible for you. You're going to be deprived forever. We're not thinking about what we get from not having chocolate and how we'd be depriving ourselves of that. So when I get chocolate under control in my life, I lost probably about 80 pounds and my triglycerides came down. I didn't have to worry about having a heart attack or a stroke anymore. And you know, all kinds of other positive effects took hold in my life. And if I was continuing to have chocolate, I'd be depriving myself of that. So it's not a matter of whether I'll be deprived, it's which type of deprivation I want to choose. And so separating out my voice from the pig's voice would help me remember that there was this other kind of deprivation, and I really wanted to be free of health concerns and really wanted to get better sleep and all the things that letting go of chocolate in that way would do for me.
So you were able to kind of bring that to the front of your mind and being able to sit with that. It sounded like it really gave you the space to slowly change that behavior. And like you said earlier, it didn't change overnight. It took some time to change. And
yeah. The other part that I recognized now was really helpful was that I was using rules as opposed to guidelines. And the problem with, for example, not eating chocolate 90% of the time and eating it 10% of the time, which in theory sounds like a great idea. The problem with it is that every time you're in front of a chocolate bar, you have to make another decision. And decisions tax your willpower. There's a lot of research in the ego depletion field that suggests that there are only so many good decisions we can make in the course of the day, particularly about food. And so by saying, I never eat chocolate during the week, all my chocolate decisions for the week are gone. And I don't need willpower to get through the week like that because I've become the kind of person who just doesn't have chocolate during the week.
Right. It sounds like being like really strategic, like knowing some of this this new research that comes out about willpower and stuff like that. It's like really about being strategic in your choices so that your brain has the best chance to make the decisions that you know on a, I guess on a higher level are the best for you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's incredibly helpful. I think when we get kind of caught up into it, when we're in it, it's so hard to be able to step back. But it sounds like being able to make these rules and really being able to talk to yourself in this way changes that paradigm.
Reminded me that I was in charge like an alpha wolf. And if an alpha wolf is challenged for leadership, it doesn't say, oh my goodness, someone needs a hug.
Right.
It snarls and it growls and it says, get back in line or I'll kill you.
Right.
Right. It takes charge. And slowly but surely it worked. I lost the weight and I got healthy. And
what motivated you to like put this out? I mean, because this is personal information, you know, when we struggle with these things and it's difficult, what made you decide to like, I'm going to put this out. I want to help people. I really want people to get this information. It's worked for me. And
I wasn't going to.
Oh, okay.
I was going to keep it private. I kept the journal for 8 years of me versus the pig and all the crazy things that it said. And I was never going to share it, but I was a minor partner in a publishing company when I was getting divorced. And as I was getting divorced, I had to close down the other things that I was doing. So I needed something to focus on. And my partner, who was the CEO of the company, said, Glenn, we need to publish a book to prove to everybody that we know what we're doing so we can attract better authors. And I said, well, I wrote this journal and every now and then I think it really should be a book, but I don't know. It's kind of crazy. And It's me versus my inner pig. He says, I love it. I have to see it.
You're like, wait a minute. What am I getting myself into here?
So I sent it to him. Mm-hmm. And it started him on a journey where he lost 86 pounds. And he was an expert at publishing. You know, and I have a background in marketing. I have a very strong background in marketing. So.
Right.
So he said, Glenn, I think we could really do something with this. And 600,000 downloads later, I'm the guy who walks around saying, I've got this pig inside me, see, and I don't need pig slop, and only farm animals tell me what to do. And Dwayne, sometimes I go into a bookstore, and every now and then someone recognizes me, and they point at me, they don't know my name, they go, pig guy.
That's funny, that's hilarious.
That's my fate in life now, that's my fate in life.
That's awesome, and that's, I mean, it's so wonderful to see when people share their own healing with the world and take the risk to put it out there to help others. And definitely, you know, with that, you can tell with that number of downloads, there's so many people out there that want help around this issue. And I think it's great. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing your wisdom. If anybody's out there and they're listening to this show and this is something they're struggling with, what would you want to tell them? What would you want to say to them if you could say one thing?
Well, one thing I would say is that it's not as complex or as difficult as it seems to be and as our culture makes it out to be. It's kind of like if you're going at things the wrong way, you could be flailing around in 6 inches of mud and you could get it into your lungs and you could die from that. But if you get up off the ground and you stand up, you're going to be uncomfortable for a little bit. You're going to have to spend some effort to wash yourself off, but you can just walk away. You don't have to be stuck in the mud on the ground, flailing around and having trouble breathing anymore. It doesn't have to be this crazy solution. It's like, sometimes are you ever in a 2-hour traffic jam and then it lets up for seemingly no reason? And there's a part of you that just is in disbelief that there had to be some really serious reason for that 2-hour jam and you want to see it. Well, what if there wasn't? What if it really wasn't such a hard solution? And yes, you suffered all these years, but you could just drive away. You could just walk away from it. That's what it's like. You don't have to have a deep spiritual insight. You don't have to, you know, contemplate your navel for years. It's good to pursue spiritual aims. It's good to contemplate your navel, but you don't have to wait till you fix all your emotional problems to fix the food problem. And I've got a whole bunch of free stuff I can give people to get them started if they want to.
I think that's an awesome statement. And I think that I love that. Just saying, you know, you can do it right now. You don't have to have the answers. You don't have to have all the answers. You can just start going.
And it doesn't matter what you did 5 hours, 5 days, or 5 minutes ago.
That's right.
It doesn't matter if you've been binging through this interview. Your last bite can still be your last bite. You don't have to keep binging.
Totally. So if people want more information about this, how can they find you? How can they get more information? Where can they go?
I put together a bunch of things for people for free to get the word out and to really help you, even if you never work with us directly. One is the free copy of the book. You can get a free copy of the book in Kindle, Nook, or PDF format. Just go to neverbingeagain.com and click the big red button, sign up for the reader bonuses. You'll get a copy of the book in Kindle, Nook, or PDF format. There are also links to the physical copies and the Audible copies if you don't mind paying a little bit, but the electronic version is free. Two other things you'll get when you go there are a free set of food plan starter templates. So people were struggling before I did this with how to construct rules for themselves that might work. And there are all these different dietary philosophies. And so we put together a set of rules that might work. I'm not going to take responsibility saying that they will work. You have to own them for yourself and modify them for yourself. But we have rules for high carb and low carb and point counting and calorie counting and vegan or macrobiotic or carnivores, whatever you happen to be, there's a set of rules to get you started, and it's all in the food plan starter templates, also with the big red button on neverbingeagain.com. And the last thing is that I know that this sounds really, really harsh and weird in theory. You must be wondering, why does Dwayne have this psychologist on the show that has a pig inside him? I don't get it. Well, It's not. It's actually very life-giving and compassionate and affirmative. And I wanted you to hear people going from a sense of powerlessness and confusion and hopelessness and despair to hope and enthusiasm and confidence that they could actually beat this. And a lot of times you can do it in one session. So I recorded a bunch of those sessions and I made them available for free. You'll get that too when you go to neverbingingangup.com and click the big red button, sign up for the reader boxes.
Oh, that's so awesome. And to be able to you know, really provide hope for people, because a lot of times people feel so defeated by this, but having all these tools, I think is so helpful. So Glenn, I want to thank you for coming on to the Addicted Mind podcast and being a guest and sharing your wisdom. I just really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me here. It was delightful. I hope I didn't overtalk you.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Addicted Mind podcast. All the show notes will be at theaddictedmind.com/59. I think there's a lot of great resources there, so I would definitely check it out if this is an issue for you. I really like Glenn's stuff, and I think it's very actionable, so check it out. Once again, don't forget, rate us and review us in iTunes. That really does help. And don't forget, join our Facebook group at The Addicted Mind Podcast. Just do that search in Facebook group, will come up, and click join. All right, everybody, have a wonderful day, and I will talk to you on the next episode.
It's easy to blame ourselves for our struggles with alcohol. We see people around us being able to control their drinking without any consequences, yet no matter what we try, we can't seem to figure it out for ourselves. My name is Jillian Teets, and I am the host of the Sober Powered podcast, where I use my biochemistry background to explain the latest research in addiction and help you understand both why you drink the way you do and how to develop the skills and mindset you need to find freedom from alcohol. I discuss topics like why we think about our drinking 24/7, why we have no off switch, and why we crave alcohol. If you're struggling with your drinking or you know someone who is, then I hope that you will check out the Sober Powered podcast. New episodes every Friday. See you there.